Today's daf is Ksuvis daf lamed tes. We are holding. We're going to start again from daf lamed ches on beis because it's a new inyan, and the Gemara is going to start with Rava has some sort of question that the Gemara has three interpretations of this question that Rava asks. Yesh beger bekever, oh ein beger bekever. We're going to have three interpretations of what that means. Then the Mishnah Named Aleph is going to discuss the differences between onas and mefata, the various obligations that one who's ma'anis a woman has toward that woman and one who's mefata, both in terms of the payment obligations and the marriage obligations. Then the Gemara is going to discuss what exactly the payment of tsar by an onus is for. What kind of tsar is he specifically paying for? On Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to talk about the source that onus and mefata and their fathers, each of their fathers, can refuse the marriage, even though there's an obligation by an onus and perhaps by mefata as well to marry her. Both she and her father can refuse that marriage and decide that they're not interested. And then the Gemara is going to discuss at the very end of the daf whether an onus gets a ksuba, whether an anusa gets a ksuba in addition to her knas payment, or she does not get a ksuba. So again, let us begin from Lamed Ches Amud Beis. We had mentioned that Abaye had said as a matter of fact that Ba'ala Umesa Pater, that if a man is bald the woman and then she dies, he's pater from paying the knas, because the pasuk says in Asan Lavi Anara velo avi mesa, that you pay to the avi anara, but it doesn't say anywhere that you pay, but implied from that is that she has to still be anara, but once she's mesa, you don't have to pay anything. So the Gemara comments that yes, that was pashuta abaye, that once she dies, you don't pay the father anything. Milsa de pshitale la abaye mi bayile larava, but that which was pashuta abaye Abaye was not so pasha to Rava. Now we're going to have three interpretations of what Rava's question is. The fact that we're suggesting that it was not so pasha to Rava is in the third interpretation of what Rava's question is. So it's going to take us a while to get there. So now it's going to seem like an unrelated question that Rava asks. Debay Rava, yesh beger bakever, o ein beger bakever. Do we assume that there's a sense of bagrus in the kever? What does that mean? So Rashi points out, yesh beger bakever, im meso bina arusa ad shaloam de bedin. Let's say the girl dies as an Arab before there was omid bedin. Vigiez man bagrusu bekever, michash beger olav. That and then she gets to the point where she's a bogeres while she's already dead. She reaches the age of bagrus. So is that considered that she's a bogeres or not? Now the background to this question of yesh beger bakever or ein beger bakever is the Mishnah Memalef and Beis tells us that if a nar is not maspik lamud bedin at shabagra, if before the amid the bedin she becomes a bogeres, the onus pays the nara herself. Ma'anes, the man pays the Nara herself, does not pay her father. So what if the Nara dies bina arusa and it gets to the point where she would have been a bogeres before the Amida Bedin? Now the father is Tovea the Knas. So do we say yesh beger bekever oin beger bekever? So now that's going to be the first explanation the Gemara has for that shayla. Yesh beger bekever udubnahavi. Do we assume that she becomes a bogeres bekever and therefore she's really entitled to the payment, and since she's really entitled to it, her yoresh gets it, her son will get it. Or maybe no, she was a nara, she died a nara, that means she remains a nara forever, and therefore the father gets the knas payment. So Gemara, how's this even possible? Umi ma'abra, can a girl really become pregnant as a katana, where she's then going to die with a child as a nara? I mean, the only way she's going to have a baby as a nara is if she became pregnant as a katana. Can a katana really become pregnant? V'atani Rabbi became the Rav Nachman Shalosh Nashim Hashem Shalosh B'moch. Rabbi said in front of Rav Nachman that there are three women that are allowed to use this form of birth control that's mashchis the zera, that destroys the zera that goes into her body. Eluhain, and the three girls that are allowed to use it are Ketana, Umu, Uberes, Umenika. Ketana, Shlo, Tesaber, Vitamos. A Ketana is allowed to use it because if a Ketana were to become pregnant, she would die. So Tzakanas Nefashos, that's why she uses it. So you see clearly, Ketana is not able to become pregnant and actually deliver a baby. If she becomes pregnant, she dies. Muberes, Shemetasu, Ubrasandal. If a girl is already pregnant, we allow her to be Meshameshes B'moch, lest the baby become, thus the one baby crushed the other baby, manika shemet tigmal espina, and a nursing woman, we allow her to be meshameshes b'moch, lest she try to wean her child too early off of her milk because she's trying to become pregnant with the next child, or because she has become pregnant with the next child, and that's going to be sakana for the first child, because that's the child's sustenance. Ve'ezui ketana, and what's the definition of a ketana? Mibasachas es reshon v'yomechad, at shtem es reshon v'yomechad, from the age of 11 to the age of 12. Pachus mikain v'yesral kain, mishameshes kedarkav alechas divrei Meir. Remeir holds any less than that, any younger than 11, or any older than 12, she doesn't have to worry, she could be mishamesh kedarka, meaning younger than 11, she's not going to get pregnant anyway, so therefore it's not going to be a sakana, and older than 12, she can get pregnant, and it's not going to be a sakana. V'cham omrim achazu v'achazu, mishameshes kedarkav alechas, minashmaim yirachmu, and v'cham say, no, at any age, she could be mishameshes kedarka, and Hashem will have rachmanas on her, that nothing should happen. Mishum Shnemar, Shomer Psoim Hashem. That's the concept that we've had of Shomer Psoim Hashem, that Hashem protects the simple ones, Hashem protects the fools, and therefore she could just behave as normal in almost every case where you have Shomer Psoim Hashem, means doing normal behavior, what people consider normal behavior, even though technically it might be dangerous, but since that's what people consider to be normal behavior, you're allowed to consider to continue doing that normal behavior. That's Rav Moshe's famous tshuva about smoking, that's what he considered smoking to be, like a normal behavior, because he thought it was like a normal taiva, like eating is a normal taiva that people have. So even though technically a person is not really allowed to eat unhealthy foods, but we say we have a sense of Shomer Psoim Hashem. So that's how Rav Moshe understood smoking. It could very well be argued that Rav Moshe would understand smoking differently nowadays, knowing what we know. But anyway, v'chi tema di abrik shina. So the bottom line is, we're asking, how is it possible that Rava is asking this whole question of when a girl dies as a nara and becomes a bagaris bekever, who gets the knas? Does her son get it or does her father get it? How in the world does she have a son? She can't get pregnant as a katana. So maybe you're going to say, no, she became pregnant as a nara and she had a baby as a nara. It all happened while she was a nara. But there's only a 6-month time period where a girl is a nara. Can a girl have a baby in 6 months? Shmuel teaches us that the whole period of naras only lasts 6 months. There's no more time between naras and bagrus than 6 months. The Rabbi Kiveger points out that you see from here that naras is defined as 6 months. It's not defined as a half a year, because if we're defined as a half a year in a leap year, it would be 6.5 months, and then it would be shaykh to become pregnant, because the Gemara assumes that there are two types of pregnancies. There's yoledes letisha and yoledes leshiva, and the Gemara comes to the maskana that even though yoledes letisha is any yoledes mukutayin, doesn't give birth in less than 9 full months, a yoledes leshiva is yoledes mukutayin. A girl who's experiencing the 7-month model of pregnancy can have a baby in under 7 months, in the 7th month. So if you had 6.5 months of naros, then there would be plenty of time. Magen Avraham says more pashut why it is that we assume naros is only 6 months and is not a half a year, because the Gemara uses the expression shisha chadashim. It never uses chatzi shana. For example, whenever you have a halacha about a year, so when do we assume it's a din in 12 months and when do we assume it's a din in the calendar year? So generally speaking, it depends how Chazal formulated it. If Chazal formulated that something is a shana, so then it's a calendar year. If they formulate it as Yud Beis Chodesh, then it's 12 months. It only gets tricky when they say both, when they say Yud Beis Chodesh Shana, or Shana Yud Beis Chodesh, something like that. So then it gets a little tricky. But typically speaking, if they say the number of months, then it's the number of months. If they say the year, then it's year. Over here it says explicitly Shisha Chadashim. V'chi Teim, and if you're going to say no, Batiru Deleka Hatfeika, then maybe you're going to say no, Narus can never be less than 6 months, but maybe it can be more than 6 months. No, it says Ella, so it has to be that it means that it's a maximum of 6 months. So that cannot be Rava's Shaila. Rava's Shaila cannot be, can a girl become a Bogeris in the Kever to the extent that she will become entitled to her Knas payment, and since she's dead, her son will get her Knas payment for her, because it can't be, she can't have a son. Just very important, Tosos, to point out over here, we had mentioned that there are 3 Nashim, Mishamshos B'moch, so Rashi writes that it means 3 Nashim that we allow them to be Mishamish B'moch, and it's not considered to be Hashchas Azera. For everyone else, it would be Asir. So says tells us very near the Rabbeinu Tam. The Ketana Ve'Eilin is Mutal Shamish Ba'Adai V'Lavi Ashchas Tzarek even Shul Derech Tashmish. By a Ketana, by an Eilinist, they're never going to become pregnant, and still there's no Isra of Tashmish with a Ketana and with an Eilinist. Why aren't we worried about Ashchas Tzarek? They can't become pregnant. No, because it's Tashmish Kedarka. You're having normal Tashmish with a woman. So why would Mishamshus Pimoch be any different? It's normal Tashmish with a woman. She can't become pregnant from it. But how could you call that Hashchas Zera? So Mefarish Rabbeinu Tam, Mishamshus means Tzrichos L'Shamish B'moch. Not that she's Mutter L'Shamish B'moch, but that she's Mechuyevas, that she has to be Mishamish B'moch. Achar Tashmish, Veitzotova Kamashman, it's giving her advice of what she's supposed to do. But the Reed defends Rashi. L'Rinir L'Kayim Pirish B'Kuntrus, D'Bereish Nida Mashmash Shamochu B'me'el Kol Shoah V'Avika Mishamish Al-Avanim V'Ala Eitzim. The Reed suggests that no, that when one is Mishamish B'moch, it never is Machnis into the Gufa Isha. The Zera never really enters the Gufa Isha, and that you can't call being Mishamish Kedarka Derech Tashmish. Now, it's not Derech Tashmish if it's never Machnis into her body. The Moch is a blocker, it blocks it entirely. It would be like using a condom or something where it doesn't even go into the Gufa Isha, where it's absolutely forbidden. V'lo Dami L'Mishamish Ketana V'Eilinis. And therefore, it's not like being Mishamish a Ketana or an Eilinis or a woman who's on hormonal birth control or something like that, where it goes into the Guf Ha'isha. It's just that we happen to know that she's unable to get pregnant. I could tell you stories of many people who have with the hormonal birth control. She is able to get pregnant very often, or at least sometimes. So that's the difference. That's how he defends Rashi. Voda filu eisam nasanus moch achat tashmish, and even if the moch is only placed there after tashmish, asura dalf bishen mitzuvel periv rivim mikol makom asuri. Because even though a woman doesn't have mitzvah puravu, she is also to be mashche zera, so she can't go in and destroy that zera that's already there. So that's something that she's doing by inserting the moch even after the tashmish is already over. Okay, so that's a critical tosus, whether in terms of the birth control sugya, whether when we say three nashim misham shos moch, meaning those are the only women that are mutter to use this form of birth control, or do we assume no, those are the ones that we advise them to use this, but really anyone is the implication would be anyone would technically be mutter to be mishamish b'moch, and that's what Tos says, that it's the same thing as having bia with a ketana or with an islandist, where you know that they're not going to be able to become pregnant. So back in the Gemara now, rather alahachi coming by lay. What was Rava's real shaila about beggar bekever? Yesh beggar bekever upaka av. Now the shaila is, do we assume that she becomes a bogeres bekever where the father loses his right to claim anything? Because if the girl is a nara, the father has the right to take the knas. Otherwise, the father does not. She would take the knas herself when she becomes a bogeres. But if she becomes a bogeres after the maisa, but before the gemar din, she's not alive anymore. She doesn't have any children, obviously, as we just established. So then the guy keeps the money; doesn't have to pay the knas at all. Al dilma ein beggar bekever velo paka'av. Or maybe no, there's no bogeres bekever, and the father still gets to lay a claim on that money. Mar Baravashi by Lahachi. Mar Baravashi says no, a third interpretation of Rav's Shaila. Misa osa bagrus o ein osa bagrus. The Shaila is, does the Misa itself make the bagrus or does it not? So as Rashi explains, Mar Baravashi lo bay la bay de Rav Mishum Beger Bekever, ele im Mesa bina Arusa, mi paka ki bagrus de Mechaim. Is death the same? Does death accomplish the same thing as bagrus would accomplish if she were still alive or not? So la hailish of the Mar Baravashi, Rashi points out, alibi de Rav Armalel Nusl de Pshit le la bay mi bay le la Rava. It's this lashon, this interpretation of Rav's question that we referred to before, when we said that which Abaye was sure about, Rava was not so sure about. The first lashon of Rava was very clear that Misa is not mafkia any chiyuv. Udaloka Abaye calls man shalo bagra, and not like Abaye, so long as she didn't become a bogeres. Meaning Abaye's whole point was that if she, once she's dead, you no longer have to pay the father anything. Rava, in the first interpretation of Rava's question, did not understand that way. His whole question is, if she reaches the stage where she would have become a bogeres while she's bekever, that's where the whole shayla was. V'chikam bayle bebeger bakever kam bayle. Avu misa calls manch lo barga polgada bayivram lo mifka v'chayiv. So that's the shayla that Abaye was so sure about, and Rav is not so sure about. Does the father lose his rights from her death itself? Does her death itself count as making her a bogeres that would take away the father's rights to collect the knas? And the Gemara says, teku. It leaves it unresolved. Rav asks Abaye a different shayla. Ba'ala v'nis arsa mahu. What if the man is ma'anis a woman, and then someone else is ma'aris her, someone else marries her with erisin? So what's the din at that point? So first of all, Tosfos points out, we had three different shitos previously between Rabbi Akiva the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva the Braisa, and Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Tosfos points out that Rabbi Akiva the Masnisin kamim bayle, dominis the whole shaila is only within Rabbi Akiva of the Mishnah, who holds that if a girl had erusin and then got divorced and then someone was ma'anis her, that she receives her knas. Do we assume that since once a girl has erusin, she's outside of her father's rishus with regard to knas, so now her knas payments will go to herself? Or do we assume that no, since she's still rishus avia for everything else when she has erusin, so the knas will still go la avia if the erusin comes after the rape? Meaning we had the machlokas through a machlokas if she had erusin and was divorced from the erusin before the rape. But according to Rabbi Akiva, that in that situation she would get her own knas. What you see from that is that erusin takes her out of rishus aviha on a certain level. So that's our shaila. Does erusin after the rape take her out of rishus aviha? Avol Rabbi Akiva the Braisa, but according to Rabbi Akiva the Braisa, pshita the knas alavi, it would be obvious that the knas goes to the father, because even if she had erusin prior to the rape, the knas would go to the father. So certainly when she has erusin after the rape, the knas will go to the father. And the Rabbi Yossi Aglili nidamar ein la knas, and even according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who says that if she had erusin prior to the rape, she doesn't get a knas. Also, there wouldn't be a shaila, because the reason she doesn't get a knas if she previously had erusin has nothing to do with whether she's in the rishus ha'av or not in the rishus ha'av. It was all because of gzeres hakasuv that asher lo arasa, that it has to be a girl that never had erusin. And this takli in our case is a girl who never had erusin before the rape. It's only afterwards that she had the erusin. So our whole shaila is only within Rabbi Akiva of the Mishnah. Why doesn't the Gemara mention that? So the Gemara says, it asks because halach Rabbi Akiva mechavero. We have the right to assume that we're going to pass on like Rabbi Akiva against Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and we have the right to assume probably that Rabbi Akiva of the Mishnah is the more authoritative Rabbi Akiva than the Rabbi Akiva of the Braisa. So we just asks it stam, even though really it's only locked in according to Rabbi Akiva of the Mishnah. So what happens if the girl has erusin after the rape? What's the din? Amrle miksiv v'nasan l'avia nara asher lo arusa? Does it say you give to the avia nara that is still not an arusa? Well, it doesn't say that, so you still give it to the father. Well, what do you mean? We paskin that if she has nisuin afterwards, she does get to collect her own knas. What does it say? You give lavia nara asher lo nisua? Doesn't say that either. Yet that's the halacha. So Gemara explains, no, hachi ashti, you can't compare if she had nisuin to a case where if she only had erusin. Hasam holu bagrus matsir mirshosav nisuin matsir mirshosav. When a girl has nisuin, you can compare nisuin to bagrus, that both of them take her completely out of the rishus of her father. So ma bagrus ba'alo bagra liatzma, just like by a bogeres, if the man is ma'aniser and then she becomes a bogeres before the amad bedin, she gets her own knas payment. If he was boel her and then they had nisuin, she gets her own knas payment. Ela erisin mika mafkim rishus da'av legamri. But by erisin, the question is, does it take her out of the rishus ha'av or not? Hatna naram rasa viobala mefir la nidra. Meaning we know it doesn't. We know that it doesn't take her out of the rishus ha'av legamri when she only has erisin, because after all, when it comes to hafaras nidarim, when it comes to undoing her nidarim, the halacha is via ubala mefir la nidareha, which means, as Rashi points out, Einu mufarat shiyufushneyan. The neder is only hufar if both of them are made for the neder, both the father and the husband. So the father has no exclusive rights on his daughter when it comes to nedarim after erisin. So you can't compare a girl who already had nisuin to a girl who only had erisin. So that's why we had the shaila about the erisin after the onus, so whether erisin after the onus is going to take the knas payment away from the father or not. Okay, new Mishnah. This Mishnah is going to discuss the difference between onus and mefata. Ha-mefata nosin shlosha devarim va-onus arba'a. If a man is mefata, he seduces a girl, he pays her three things, an onus pays her four things. Ha-mefata nosin boshes begam knas. For mefata, someone who's mefata, he has to pay for her embarrassment, for her devaluation, plus the knas. Most of the onus knows in a tzar. An onus has to pay for her pain as well. So before we go any further, if what would have been lost had the Mishnah said Hamafata nosein boshes pegam knas most of avonis nos nesar? Why does it have to have that whole first line that Hamafata gives three things, onus gives four things? You can count it on one hand. We have enough fingers to count onus and Hamafata. So why does it have to list the number? Shitim Gvetzes raises this question: why it has to say a number? So Shitim Gvetzes says that the number is coming to tell me that he doesn't pay sheva suripoy, even though normally when you're chovel you pay chamish. Over here, even if the mefuta becomes sick because of the hasharas habesulim, he only has to pay these three things. However, the Ralbag on Chumash in Dvarim Perachav Beis on Chumash says that if the mefuta is damaged in some way from the hasharas habesulim, then he does have to pay the ripoy and the shabbos like any other chovel. So he has to say the reason the Mishnah doesn't say that the reason the Mishnah doesn't mention that is because it's not so common that she's going to get sick, and there is therefore going to be a ripoy and a shevis payment. But in a chenami, if she does, then you would pay a ripoy and a shevis payment. So that seems to be machlokas rishonim, whether there ever could be a ripoy and a shevis payment. And the Melech HaShlomo, the Mishnah says, the reason it gives the numbers is to tell us that even if he marries her, this number stays the same. That an onus is now that he marries her, doesn't have to pay the ksuba, so he still stays at paying the four things, like the Gemara is going to say, the yatzah kesef knasa b'ksubasa, that the knas payment is in place of the ksuba. The mefata, even though you do add the ksuba payment, is pater from the knas as soon as he marries her, and then the tashlumin is still only going to be three things, is not going to be four things. There's an interesting Rambam. The Rambam discusses how do you know when it's an onus and when it's a mefata? How do we know when she was willing and when she was unwilling? Is there ever a chazaka one way or the other? So the Rambam writes that any time she's nevelas besada, she's becheskas anusa, and we treat him midin anusa until we have edim that say specifically his beretzona. And any time it was nevelas beir, we assume it was becheskas mefuta because no one heard her screaming out. So you could assume it's becheskas mefuta. So the Ravid says he doesn't understand the whole conversation. He says, how do we know that he was ma'anisar at all, that he was mefater at all? We only know that because there are edim that saw that he was ma'anisar mefater. Ask the edim what it looked like. Did it look like onus or did it look like bitui? So the Migdal Oz, he suggests that maybe the Rambam meant that if the edim were standing so far away that they couldn't tell from their vantage, they could see there was a bia, but they couldn't tell from their vantage point whether it was onus or mefater. So that's where the Rambam relies on these chazakos. Otherwise, the whole discussion of the Rambam is difficult to understand. Okay, so these are the payments that an onus and a mefata pays. Ma bein onus and mefata. What are the differences between onus and mefata? Ha onus nosin es tzar, va mefata ein nosin es tzar. So difference number one is what we already said, that the onus pays the tzar, the mefata doesn't pay the tzar. The Rishonim obviously asked the question why we have to repeat that. We just said it a line ago. Okay. Ha onus nosin miyad, va mefata l'chshiyotzi. Another difference is the onus pays the knas right away, the mefata only pays it l'kishayotzi, if he decides not to marry her. The Gemara is going to say that shouldn't be l'chsheyotzi. That could should be l'chsheyotzi implies that he's already married to her. So Gemara will deal with that. But that's what it means. If he decides not to marry her, that's when he pays the knas. Ha'ones shosa ba'atzitzo v'mefatim rata lahotzi motzi. The ones has to marry her. The mefata does not have to stay married to her. He's not, if he wants to divorce her, is allowed to divorce her. Shosu batzitzo. The Rama writes in Perish HaMishnayis that an otzitz means a kli cheres kederes shemishtamshim b'dvarim amulchlachim. An otzitz is the pot that a person would urinate in, that a person would use for something or for bloodletting or something disgusting. So that's the implication of the Mishnah. Shosu batzitzo. The woman that he was pogim, that he made meus. That's what he's shows. He shows about tzitzo. Whereas a mefata im ratzalotzi motzi, mefata does not have to be shosa. If he wants to divorce her, he can. Now the Tosfos Yontif just wonders on that Rambam that why he assumes atzitz means a disgusting kli. Throughout Shas we have atzitz nakiv, atzitz sheino nakiv. That always just means a pot. It means a pot that you plant something in. It doesn't necessarily mean something like a graf shel rei or something like that. So it's difficult to understand why the Rambam assumes that that's what it has to necessarily mean over here, that it's a davar ma'us. Keitz ha'chos ha'batzitzo, in what sense is he mechuyev to be with her? Afilu hi chigeres, afilu hi suma, afilu hi mukashchin. Even if she's a chigeres, suma, mukashchin, she's someone that's very undesirable. Nimtza ba'dvar erva, o she'enu ru'i alavu b'Yisrael, eino rasha lekaima. But if he finds a dvar erva, that there's something wrong with her, or that she's not ru'i alavu b'Yisrael, she's not muteres to marry a regular Jew, so he's not allowed to stay with her. He's not allowed to keep her. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, "Velos yeli isha." Isha ru'uyalo, that yes, he has to marry her, but only if she's an isha ru'uyalo, only if she is ra'uy to him. So a couple of things over here. The lashon eino rasha lekaima is not as forceful as one would expect. One would expect that the lashon should be that she'eino ru'uyalo b'Yisrael, yotziana, he has to divorce her, motzia, he has to get rid of her. Eino rasha lekaima implies something less than that. So the Chasam Sofer writes, based on what's paskened in the Ramah, in Ebenezer, Simon Kuf Yud Zayin, that if a woman becomes asur lebaila, let's say a woman is mizana tachas baila, the halach is not that we force him to divorce her. He's not mechayiv to divorce her. It's just that they're allowed to stay married. It's just that they're not allowed to have yichud together unless they're reidim watching them, meaning they're never allowed to be alone together because they're never allowed to have bia together. So then you understand very well what the Mishnah is saying over here. There's no isser of them being married per se. The isser is they can't have bia. So in a rasha lekaima, he can't stay with her as man and wife. But we're not going to say yotziana that you have to force him to divorce her. That's how the Chasam Sofer explains. Based on that Rama, that must be what the lashon over here is. That's the lashon of the Torah. V'cheinim nasu matzav erevas davar yachal legarsha. The Torah says yachal legarsha. He's allowed to divorce her, meaning he's allowed to divorce her because he doesn't have a real normal marriage with her, so he's allowed to divorce her, but he's not forced to divorce her. Now, isha ru'uyelo, the Mishnah says at the end that he only has this mitzvah of losi li isha if she's an isha ru'uyelo. The Rambam writes in Hilchas Naru Perek Aleph Halacha Hey, in Torah passing this way, Shulchan Aruch passing this way, that what if she's only aser midrabanan? She's a shnia midivrei sofrim. Is he allowed to marry her then? So the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, that eino rashe lenosa, that he's not allowed to marry her in that case either, even though she's only asur midrabanan. So I asked the Kesef Mishnah the obvious question: Mida raisi has a chiv to marry her. How could an isur midrabanan come and be mevatel a mitzvah da raisa of lo siya liisha? So because Mishnah explains that since shnios is darshened from mishmartimus mishmarti, it's considered kedin Torah, and since all mitzvos midrabanan from Lo Sasur, it's Ki'ilu, it's a Lav Ha'amur B'Torah. Very big Chiddush, meaning that's a very expansive view of what Lo Sasur actually does, that it views it like an actual Lav in the Torah. Major Machlokes, Rambam, Ramban, and Sefer HaMitzvos, how broadly we view the scope of Lo Sasur. Pashtus is, you could say, like Tos Yantif says, that since not marrying an Anusas, Shevi Altase, so Chamor, Oker Dav Min HaTorah, B'Shevi Altase sometimes. So the Chamor are going to say, in this case, that they're going to be Mamid Devrayim, B'Makom Torah, B'Shevi Altase. Okay, says the Gemara, Tsar Demai. So we said that someone who's Ma'anis, a girl, has to pay Tsar. What Tsar is he paying for? So the Gemara has a couple of suggestions. Suggestion number one, Amar Avud Shmuel, Tsar Shechavta Al Gabe Karka. The pain that was caused when he threw her on the ground. different. So if the ma'anis was kind enough to throw her on some cushions on a mattress, so now he's not going to have to pay for tsar, he's going to be pater. And if you're going to say, yeah, in a chinami, he's pater if he threw her on some cushions. That an onus doesn't pay the tsar because ultimately she's going to experience that same tsar when she's married anyway. And the response was, no, you can't compare. She's not going to have the same tsar because well, she's going to be nevelis baratzon when she's married. But if we're talking about just throwing her on the ground, so then what do you mean? If the ma'anis does not throw her on the ground, she doesn't have the tsar then. And if the husband does throw her on the ground, she has the tsar then. So the whole chiluk doesn't make sense. Ella, rather, Gemara says, no, what tsar are we talking about? Ella, Amrav Nachman, Amrav Baravua, tsar shel pisak haraglayim. It's the tsar of spreading her legs. V'cheinu Amrav Tivski es ragleich l'chol over. Ihachi mafuta nami. Well, if that's the case, the mafuta should have that same tsar as well. So Amrav Nachman, Amrav Baravua, and we said in the Mishnah that for a mafuta, you don't pay the tsar, only for ones, you pay the tsar. So Amrav Nachman, Amrav Baravua, mashal de mafuta l'ma davar doma. No, mafuta in a chinami, she also has pisak raglayim, but she has some pain from pisak raglayim, but you know what that's like? It's la'adam shomer l'chaveru karashi rightly shali v'hi pater. It's like someone telling his friend, I want you to rip my clothing and don't worry, you'll be pater. So then the person is pater if he rips the clothing. If the Bailam gave Rishus to tear the clothing, so he's pater. So the woman is saying, by mafuta, she's interested. She's interested in the bia. So she's experiencing the tsar on her own will. And therefore, you can be pater from paying for that tsar. Now Tosfos points out, but wait a second, where did she ever say v'tipater? If a guy just says tear my clothing and he never says hipater, halach is you're not pater. It's only if he says v'tipater that you're going to be pater. Where did the girl ever say v'tipater? She never said you're going to be pater. So Tosfos points out v'afgav de lo amra almanas liftar, even though she never said it's almanas liftar, ikal memer demachmas hanos bi'ilam machla legamri. That's because we assume when a person says rip my clothing, why would he be completely mochel the value of his clothing? So only if he says explicitly that you're pater are you actually pater. But if a woman is having anas tashmish, anas bi'ila, so we assume that anas is enough to make her want to be mochel the tsar that she's experiencing. Sheli, wait, frankly Gemara, she has the right to be mochel the tsar payment? She's a nara. She doesn't receive that payment anyway. Da'avuaninu. It's her father that receives that payment. Who gave her the right to be mochel? A payment that goes to the father. So says Mariah, it's the father that receives the payment, but only because the girl is having a painful experience that the payment is made. So the Gemara explains, Elam Rav Nachman, Rav Baravua, Pichos Sheben Omros, Mefuta in Latzar. The Pichos say, the wise women say, that a Mefuta doesn't have Tzar. It's not a painful experience for the Mefuta. For a woman who's Ne'enas, it's a painful experience. For a woman who's Mefuta, it's not a painful experience. What do you mean? You see, a young girl who's a Mefuta, she'll be complaining of pain for a while after the Tashmish. So how can you say that there's no pain? Of course there's pain. The pain is compared to, we have three different comparisons, but it's very difficult to distinguish between them because it's hard to understand any of them. But the three different comparisons, they all relate to the same idea. They all relate to the idea that there are certain things that are a little bit painful but very enjoyable, and therefore the pain is worth it. It's like the way people enjoy a workout or something. You know, it's painful but it's also enjoyable, so the pain feels like it's worth it. So in that experience for a mafuta is that kind of pain. So Abaye gives the example from Aim, which is not really his mother, as Rashi points out over here. It was the woman who had raised him and who had nursed him or whatever, and the Bach points out that because the Gemara in Kiddushin tells us that Yoldaso Imo Umesa, Abaye's mother gave birth to him and then died immediately after giving birth to him. His father had died before that, immediately after he was conceived. His father had died, so Abaye never had parents. That's why Abaye is the one that says in Maseches Kiddushin in the Kibbutz Aveim sugyas that in some level he was thankful that he never had parents, because the challenge of Kibbutz Aveim is such a great challenge to do it properly, to do the mitzvah of Kibbutz Aveim properly, that it's almost impossible for a person to fulfill his total obligation in the mitzvah of Kibbutz Aveim. So anyway, so Abaye says in the name of Aim, apparently the woman who raised him gave him a lot of a lot of wisdom, and he always quotes her throughout throughout Shas, that it's that the pain that the Mufut experiences is like warm water on a bald head, which apparently is very comforting. I don't know. Rava Amar, Amarli Basra of Chista. Rava says that that the Basra of Chista would say, right, I should know, right? Ki Rivda de Kisilta. That Rava says it's like Rivda de Kisilta is like a bloodletting needle, which also it's somewhat painful, but it's a kishmak to get bloodletting, apparently. Rav Papa Amar, Amarli Bas Abba Surah, that Bas Abba Surah, his wife, said, it's like coarse bread that's delicious. So sometimes the crust is a little hard, so it hurts your teeth to chew a little bit, but the bread's delicious. You still eat it, so it's still worth it. The onus has to pay the kenas right away, but by mefata, it's only l'kshayotzi. It's only when he doesn't marry her. L'kshayotzi, ishtohi. What do you mean when he's motzi her? When he's motzi her implies that she's his wife. Is she his wife yet? No, he's only mefata her. What do you mean that No, what it means is when he chooses not to marry her, that's when he pays the kenas payment. Even though Mefata pays when he doesn't marry your Boshes of Begam, Nosin Miyad. But the Boshes of Begam payment, that he pays right away. Both an onus and a Mefata, both she and her father can decide that they're not interested and that they don't want the girl marrying this guy. So Bishlam Mefuta Ksiv, I understand very well by Mefuta, the Pasuk says, Imma Ein Yima Ein Aviha, Ein Liela Aviha Hiatzma Minah. And the pasuk says explicitly the father has the right to refuse. How do I know that she also has the right to refuse? Tamalamer yima ein mikal makom, because the double lashon ma'ein yima ein. So the double lashon tells us that she can refuse as well. Ela ones, but when it comes to ones, bishlama ihi, I understand she can refuse. Ksiv velosia midaita. Velosia implies that she's interested. Ela avia minalan, but how do I know that the father can also refuse the marriage? Says Gemara, two possibilities. Amar Abaye shelo yehechote niskar. We don't want the sinner, the rapist, to benefit that he's able to take this girl against the will of her father. Rava Amar kal v'chomer. Rava says no, it's a kal v'chomer. Umam mefata shelo avar ala aldas avia bulvad. If a man was mefata a girl where the girl was interested and was a willing participant, so all the man did was violate the ratzon of her father. Bein hi bein aviyei chol nakev, and still both she and her father can decide that the marriage is not going to happen. Ones shavar al das aviyah v'al das atzma lo kol shkein. So by a case of ones where he violated both her own will, her own desire, and the desires of her father, so then all the more so they should both have the right to refuse the marriage. Rava lo amar ka Abaye. Rava didn't want to say like Abaye that it was just a chote niskar issue, because kiven to kamishalim knas lav chote niskar hu, because he's not actually benefiting, he's paying knas, so you can't call it a chote niskar situation if he's paying the knas. Abaye lo amar ka Rava. Abaye didn't want to say like Rava, mefata di ihu mati ma'akev avianami mati ma'akev. By a case of mefata where the guy himself can refuse, so that's why the father can refuse. By case of mefata, the guy himself doesn't have to marry her. He could choose not to marry her. So over there, maybe we're saying we're a little more lenient with how that marriage happens. So that's why we allow the father to be ma'akev the marriage by mefata. But ones, ti'iu lo mati ma'akev, but by an ones where the guy himself is forced into it, maybe avianami lo mati ma'akev. Maybe the Torah is telling us on some level that this marriage has to happen, and that this marriage is something that we are going to insist on, short of the girl refusing it. So it's gonna have to happen, even if the father refuses it. Tanya idach, we have another brisa. Afal pi sha'amru ones nosin miyad kishayotzi hu ein lo alav klum. Even though an ones gives the knas right away, when he divorces her, she doesn't get any knas. Kishayotzi mi matzi mapikla, meaning he doesn't get any ksuba. He already paid the knas, so she doesn't get any further payment when they get divorced. So ask the Gemara, what do you mean kishayotzi when they get divorced? He's not allowed to divorce her. Say ema kishateitzehi ein la alav klum. It means when she asks for a divorce, when she's toveya a get from him, so then he's allowed to divorce her if she asks for a divorce. Mace Yatza Kesef Knasa Biksubasa. If he dies, she also doesn't get a ksuba because the knas payment goes in place of the ksuba. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Omer Yeshla Ksuba Mana. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says no, she'll still get a ksuba like a ksuba of a bu'ula, a ksuba's mana. The Maika Mithli, what's the machlokus about whether she gets a ksuba or not? Rabban Sarvi Taima Maita Kin Rabban Ksuba. The whole reason that Rabbanu were misakin a ksuba is that it shouldn't be easy for a man to divorce his wife. We want it to be a difficult thing for him to divorce his wife. So if he were to get angry at his wife and he could just flippantly give her a get, so that would be very bad for Jewish marriage. So we make a significant monetary payment that has to be made along with the get, so that the man will think twice. But over here, he's not allowed to divorce her anyway. He's got an isadar raisa to divorce her. That lo yuchal shalcha kol yamav. He has to stay married to her forever. So therefore, maybe there's no need for a ksub over here. Rabbi Yosef Yudas Avar Hanami mitzair la ada amri he lo beinalach. No, he can still somehow, if he wants to divorce her without a ksuba, without a ksuba payment, he would just make her life miserable until she asks for a divorce, and then the mitzvah to stay married to her, the yisur to divorce her, would fall away because she'll be asking for it. So we still need a ksuba payment to prevent him from doing that. Tosus asks the fundamental question that if the whole reason for a ksuba is shlote kalabena v'lotia, why does an almana get a ksuba when her husband dies? He probably is not killing himself to get rid of her. So why would we have a ksuba for an almana? So he says in a chinami, they were misakin ksuba for a grusha. They never would have been misakin for an almana. Once they were misakin for a grusha, they made it for almana as well. Midin china. Just people would value their almana wives, would value their wives for almanas as well. Okay, so Bez Hashem will pick up at the two dots tomorrow. Oh, yeah.